a passage in the canon where the Buddha uses the image of a pile of twigs and branches to symbolize what we should let go of. He asked the monks, if someone were to take the twigs and branches in this monastery and set them on fire, would you say that they're setting you on fire? And the monks said, well, no, because those things are not us, they're not ours. And the Buddha says, in the same way, whatever is not really yours, let go of it. That will be to your long-term welfare and happiness. What is not yours? Five aggregates: form, feeling, perception, fabrications, consciousness. There's another passage, though, where twigs and branches are a symbol for the path. It says you lash together twigs and branches and you make a raft. And holding on to the raft, you can cross over the flood. So in the second case, the twigs and branches are something you hold on to provisionally for the purpose of getting across. Of course, you know the image that when you get to the other side, then you let the raft go. You don't carry it around on your head. But when you look at the twigs and branches of the path, you realize they're the same five aggregates. You're sitting here in concentration. It's part of the path. You've got the body, which is form, or your experience of the body is form. And the feeling of pleasure that you're trying to create through the way you pay attention to the breath. There's the perception, the image you hold in mind of how the breath flows through the body. There are the fabrications of directed thought and evaluation. As you direct your thinking to the breath, and then you evaluate how it's going. And then there's consciousness, which is aware of all these things. As you develop discernment, you're going to be using perceptions, perceptions of things being inconstant, stressful, not self, as a way of developing a sense of dispassion for them. And you'll be thinking about ways to get the mind to let go. That's fabrication. You look at every factor of the path. There's going to be some combination of aggregates. So the point here is that we don't just let go of the aggregates and throw them away. We're trying to figure out which ones are useful right now, which ones we can lash together to make a path, and which ones are just piles of twigs and branches that don't have any use at all. We hold on to the first, we let go of the second. It's in this way that we create a refuge for ourselves. When the Buddha talks about making yourself your refuge, he equates it with making the Dharma the refuge. And making the Dharma the refuge, he equates with establishing a mindfulness. Here, too, there's an image of a flood. You're trying to build an island, or at least a safe place above the island. But you always have to remember that the path is something of makeshift. You're making use of things that eventually you have to let go. And you have to have a passion for doing these things well. Ultimately, when the path has done its work, then you put it aside. But to do its work, it has to help you first develop this passion for everything else. So you hold on to this. And you learn how to use these aggregates. Don't look down on them. And John Lee says we have to look after our aggregates the same way that a person looks after a wound on his body. If you decide that you don't like it, that it's disgusting, it's got blood coming out, or it's got lymph coming out, you don't take care of it, it's going to get worse. So you take care of your aggregates. Learn to get to know them. Form is the sense of the body as you feel it from within. In other words, your experience of the body that no one else can share. It also refers to how the body looks. That's something you do share with other people. intuitive one should be more interested in how you feel it from within. That's the part of the body that you can use as an object of concentration. You could also look at it in terms of how it appears in when you take the different parts of the body apart, realizing that although it looks okay when it's all together, if you took it apart in its individual pieces, it would not look okay at all. This body that you're so attached to, this is what it's made up of. Hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, all the way down the line. But again, you use that contemplation to get yourself away from the appearance of the body, to get more interested in how you experience the body from within. Then you try to inhabit it well. You work with the breath energy. When you breathe in, how does it feel? We're trying to create a feeling of well-being here. The Buddha says simply by careful attention to the breath, being alert to the breath, you can make the breath comfortable. He doesn't go into the details. So John Lee gives some of the details. You experiment with different rhythms of breathing. Experiment with different ways of conceiving the breath. When you breathe in, you can think of it coming in different spots of the body. Or when, as it comes in, you can think of the breath energy itself originating at some spot inside the body. And as it spreads through the body, ask yourself, does it feel good? Or are you tightening it up here or squeezing it out there? Blocking it here. If you sense any blockages, think of them dissolving away. This is when you use perception. As you hold that perception in mind, and as you're conscious of how the breath feels in the body, then you evaluate how it's going. That's the fabrication part. If it doesn't feel comfortable, what do you need to change? Do you need to change the rhythm of the breathing? Do you need to change your mental image of the breath energy? We've had many people come here talk about the cycle of energy that you have in Qigong, that the breath comes in the navel, goes down through between the legs, up the back, over the head, and then out back to the navel again. That's one way of conceiving it, but it's not the only way. It's not always the best way either. Different people will have different ways of relating to the breath energy in the body. So you have to explore it for yourself. Don't come with too rigid an idea of what a good breath energy in the body will be. To evaluating it this way, you develop your own discernment. Because that's a lot of what discernment is, evaluation. Making value judgments. We practice it first with the breath, and that's the issue of how to make the breath stay with the mind, how to make the mind stay with the breath. Gets more resolved, then we can use that evaluation to look at other things. See anything that we might be holding on to that's getting in the way of the concentration, thoughts that ensnare the mind. And ask yourself, are these worth going with? Where are they going to take me? What can I do to see through them? Notice it starts with a value judgment. Are they worth it? That's a lot of what the three perceptions are all about, is judging things as to whether they're worth it or not. Remember, the Buddha looked for a happiness that wouldn't age, wouldn't grow ill, wouldn't die. No, there was a happiness that wasn't born. And so how do you know if something's been born? Well, it has these qualities of aging, illness, and death. And the three perceptions deal right with that. Aging, of course, is inconstancy. Illness is stress. Death is not self. You've got to let go of everything at that point. All the things you've identified with, all these aggregates we have here right now. You're going to have to let go at some point. So anything that comes up in the meditation, if you can see that there's in any way in which it is in constant stress for not self, you say, well, this is still something subject to aging, illness, and death. So this is not what we're after. However, the path itself is also subject to aging, illness, and death. The difference is when you hold on to the path, it can take you someplace. So as in all cases, the Buddha has you be perceptive and use your powers of judgment. It's the same with pleasures and pains on the path. There are some pleasures when you indulge in them that lead the mind to get lazy, heedless, proud that you have that pleasure, other people don't have that pleasure. And in that case, that pleasure is a danger. There are other pleasures that enable you to let go of that kind of pleasure. The pleasure of seclusion, the pleasure of living in harmony with the group, the pleasure of being outside in nature, far away from all the fabricated things that other people are pushing on you. These are good pleasures. And then, of course, they help lead to the deeper pleasure that comes from being in concentration. So you have to learn how to use these value judgments wisely. As you're working on concentration, you don't focus on the concentration as being in constant stress for not self. You focus on anything else that would pull you away. Same as when you're practicing virtue. You don't look at your precepts as being in constant stress for not self, even though they are. For the time being, you don't focus on that. You try to make them as constant as possible. Learn how to wear your virtue with a sense of ease. Focus that analysis on things that would pull you away. Your concern for your health, your concern for your wealth, your concern for your relatives, as the Buddha says. There are times when you might benefit your relatives by lying or benefit yourself by stealing. But those benefits are not worth it. So you're making a value judgment, and you're making distinctions. All too often we see the Buddha's message reduced to a few sound bites. It's all about change, all about accepting change, all about acceptance, all about equanimity. That's not the case. The Buddha's teaching is not, if it's about all about anything, it's all about nirvana. As for everything else, you use distinctions as to what helps you get to nirvana and what gets in the way. So you have to fabricate the thinking. Fabricate those value judgments that will help you decide, is this heading in the right direction or is it heading in the wrong direction? Am I holding on to twigs and branches that are going to just weigh me down? Or am I holding on to twigs and branches that are going to take me across the flood? It's learning how to make distinctions like this that your own discernment grows. And it's only when your discernment is yours that it really works. As long as it's simply something you've memorized from somebody else, it can work to some extent. But it's only when you start applying it that you understand what it's all about. There's a Pali term, atta, A-T-T-H-A. Which means meaning, but also means purpose. In other words, you're not going to know the meaning of the Dharma until you see its purpose arise within you. In other words, when you get to the end of the path, and it's when you really understand everything. Or at the very least, when you reach stream entry, you see where this all leads. That's not just a bunch of ideas that somebody over in India cooked up. These twigs and branches really do help you cross the flood. And on the other side, on the far shore, it really is safe. Things over there are not inconstant, they're not stressful, they're not self, they're not self either. The whole question of self and not self doesn't apply. But you use the Dharma. Some passages in the canon, they point out how you use the Dharma to get beyond Dhammas of all kinds. So whatever is useful, realize, okay, this is makeshift. You hold on to it to the extent that it is helpful, but you also learn when to let go. And don't be surprised that you're going to be holding on to some aggregates. You'll be clinging. It's the clinging that takes you beyond clinging, the craving that takes you beyond craving. But these twigs and branches have their uses. And the whole purpose of the path is so you can develop your discernment to get that use. And to realize the purpose, the meaning of all this for yourself. And that's when you can let everything go.